thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is presented by preaching minister Josh Yeager. Let's tune in now for Josh's message.
Well, last week we looked at worship. We started looking at worship and tried to point out the fact that the truth of this song, that worship is a lifestyle. It is going to the doorpost and piercing your ear and saying, Lord, I am yours. I'm yours for life. Worship is a lifestyle that involves kneeling and kissing and trembling and knowing that the object of your worship, the person or the being that you worship, holds everything in his hand. But that object, that person, that being that you worship, that is what determines the depth of that lifestyle. If you have a master who does not have very much power over you, you have a tendency to go your own way, because there's a possibility that, I mean, there's not very many consequences. There's nothing really holding you connected to him. But when that object, that person, that being that you worship holds everything, then you owe everything to him. And so that's what I want to talk about today. That's what I want to focus on this morning. I want to talk about the object of our worship, the worship of God. Now, this is a reminder. If you are a Christian or if you are a follower of Christ, this is basically going to hopefully be revealing to you, reigniting and refocusing you on God. This is not a defense of God. This is nothing. That's not what this sermon is about. We may have sermons about that later at some point. This is not a defense of God. So if you are not a Christian, or if you are here and you have questions in your mind, this message is not to answer your questions. This message is to focus us and refocus us on God. And when I think about our worship, when I think about just what we do as Christians, a lot of times I see a problem. I see a problem because, you know, we can walk up on into the Rocky Mountains. You know, I grew up in Colorado. I took the kids in our youth group in Cordell on a ski trip every year. And I remember just sitting up there on the Continental Divide, and, you know, you could look east and you could see the plains of Colorado. You could look west and you could just see snow-capped mountains. And you would stand up there and you would just think, man, God is awesome. And you just want to shout. You just want to say, God's awesome. And you just want to scream it out. We would often have a devotional on our last day of the ski trip on top of the mountain. And even though, if you've ever had a devotional in the wide open air, you know that it's hard to do because it just swallows the voices. There's no reverberation. There's nothing. But kids would just be just screaming out. I mean, singing as loud as they could because they could see the power and the majesty of God all around them. You know, I think about the when we walk to the ocean, if you've ever been to the ocean, maybe not Galveston. I've been there before. It's not that pretty. But if, I'm thinking like Florida or maybe California or Hawaii, and you get out and you see the ocean and you smell the salt and you just feel it and you hear the waves crashing. You just think, man, God's awesome. And the sun's coming down and the orange and the yellow and the streaks of cloud in the sky. And you just think, man, God is awesome. Or maybe you show up at the Grand Canyon. You ever been to the Grand Canyon? And you just see how big that is and how deep it is and how just it had to take a powerful God to make such a beautiful thing. And then we walk into the assembly where we are praising this God. And we walk into the assembly and sometimes we're yawning. Sometimes we're yelling at our kids. Guilty. Sometimes we're focused on things other than God. And so I see a problem. I see a problem. You know, we can go to our favorite sporting event and lose our voice because we're screaming so loud for our team. And then we come to worship service and we kind of mumble through worship service and we leave worship service with the same strength of voice that we entered it with. You know, we hear about a new restaurant. And we think, I gotta tell everybody, you know, I tried it, it's good, it's amazing. So you want to tell everybody that you know about this great restaurant that has such good food. But a lot of times, God just becomes this kind of thing that we do, or this thing that we get used to. You know, I found this incredible shaving cream. And I'm serious, it's great. Because I used to get terrible, you know, shaving rash. And I couldn't find anything. I tried all the different creams and all the different gels, and nothing worked. Finally found this one cream from Walmart called Cremo. I should have put a picture of it on the screen. And it... I just want to tell everybody, if you get rash, or if you get, you know, things from shaving, you got to try this. You know, we find something like that and we just got to tell everybody about it. But yet, we get to a place where God becomes just second fiddle, or we just become used to him. The Israelites had moments like this. If you've read through the Old Testament, if you haven't, maybe I'm going to give you a really, really fast cliff note experience of Israelite history, okay? So this may be familiar to you, it may not be. I hope you can follow along. But the Israelites had moments like this where they just forgot God. They just missed it. Start out with Abraham. You know, we end at Genesis chapter 11, where the people of the world, they try to build this tower and then get on the same level with God. And he comes down, he says, no, you can't be on the same level with me. So he confuses their language and they disperse. And that's like the end of the prologue. And then God dips into humanity, into Abraham, and he calls Abraham, this washed up old man who basically is just a nobody, because he's 75 years old, he has no kids, he has nothing going for him. God comes down, calls Abraham, and he makes him some promises. He says, hey, you're gonna have some land, you're gonna have a great nation. People are going to spring from you, even though you're childless. You're going to have kids, and you're going to have a great nation that's going to come from you. Your name is going to be great. Everybody's going to know your name. Just think about that for a second. You know, the three major faith stories on our planet include Abraham, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Okay? They're going to know your name. And you're going to be a blessing to all nations. Just comes down, just makes this promise. You know, we think everything's over at the Tower of Babel, but God reaches into humanity and he calls Abraham and he starts trying to figure out this problem that we have. And so it comes true. Abraham has a child of promise. He has Isaac, and then he has Jacob, who is renamed Israel. And Jacob, also known as Israel, has 12 sons. And they all end up stuck in Egypt for 400 years as slaves, okay? They end up stuck for 400 years. Just wrap your head around that. What happened to all those promises? You know, we hear promises of God and we get mad when they don't happen tomorrow, okay? But it's 400 years they're stuck in Egypt, and God springs them out of Egypt with these plagues. I mean, every single one of them is like a front page newspaper event. I mean, it's like huge, you know, a river turning to blood, and a nation just getting infested with frogs and flies and gnats and, you know, locusts. And then it's, you know, these big... storms and hail falling from the sky, and then 4 days of darkness, and finally it all ends with the firstborn of every family dying. I mean, these are huge events. He springs them out of Egypt, and they end up at this mountain in the desert outside of Egypt called Sinai. And they're at Sinai, and God alerts the people. He says, hey, you're my people. It's like, yeah, duh. I mean, you just did all this incredible stuff for us. We haven't done anything for you yet. You just did all this incredible stuff. You're making a nation out of nobody. And God says, you are my people. And they're like, yeah, we know. He says, if you're going to be my people, then there's going to be some rules, some commandments. It's not that you have to keep those commandments to become my people. You're already my people. But there's going to be some rules. There's going to be some differences between you and the nations around you. And so God gives them the Ten Commandments. You know, we're familiar with a lot of them. But we can basically just sum them up into two statements. Worship God only. Respect your fellow man. And love your fellow man. And so the people are like, hey, we can do that. We can do that. So let's follow God. And they say, yes, we do. And then God says, well, I already said I do. So let's have a big marriage feast out on the mountain. And so 70 elders come up. This is Exodus chapter 24, if you want to just make a note of that, and you can go back and read it. But in Exodus chapter 24, 70 elders and priests all go up there with God, and they feast in the presence of God. They see God's face. Exodus 24 says that. They see God's face, and they have this big, huge feast just saying, yeah, we're together on this. And then God says, okay, you 70 elders, you guys go back down the mountain. I'm going to talk with Moses for a little while. I'm going to give him some instructions, because if we're going to be together, if we're going to be married, if you will, you've got to have a place for me to go. And so he gives them instructions about how to build the tabernacle. And so he talks about, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, which is God's throne chariot. If you didn't realize, that's, you know, God's presence is met at the, you know, in between the cherubim on the Ark of the Covenant. He talks about all the other articles inside the tabernacle. And he just tells them, this is, you've got to have a place for me to go when I'm in your midst. And while God is giving the people this instruction, while God is giving Moses these instructions about the tabernacle, the people are like, hey, where's Moses? He's been gone for like 40 days. I guess we better figure this out. I guess we better come up with some better gods to worship, because he's been gone for 40 days. I guess he's gone. He's gone. I know, month and 10 days, you know. He's gone. And so they say, hey, Aaron, why don't you build this golden calf for us so we can worship it? And they do. They do. Because they forget. They forgot the incredible plagues. They forget the Red Sea just closing in on the Egyptians. They forget their oath, their promise that, hey, we're going to do what you said. They forget everything. They forget dining in the presence of God. And God gets really angry, and he kills a bunch of them. And look at what he says. Look at what he says to Moses in Exodus chapter 33. He says, leave this place. Leave this place. You and the people you brought, you know, whenever your kids are bad, it's like, hey, that's your son, you know, that's my wife says, that's your son, Josh, he's being bad. Leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt, and go up to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you, driving out all the Canaanites and all the other ites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you. I will not go with you, because you are a stiff-necked people, and I might destroy you on the way. God's mad. He's upset. He says, I'm going to keep my promise. I'm going to keep my promise to you, but I'm not going with you. I'm not going with you. But I love Moses' response here, okay? Because Moses gets it. Moses gets it. Sometimes he misses it. But here he gets it. And this is what he says in verse 30, in chapter 33, verse 15. He says, if your presence does not go with us, or if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? And here's the thing that Moses realizes. He realizes that it doesn't matter all the horizontal things, all the things that I can look at across, you know, horizontal is this way, all the things that I'm doing right around here, it doesn't matter if God's not present. It doesn't matter if he's not there. You know, a lot of times we get focused on the horizontal stuff. We get focused on, you know, feeding mouths, or we get focused on providing all these services, and we get focused on all the stuff that's going on around us. But what we forget is that the vertical must come first. God has to come first. And so, you know, having childcare at a church, and having children's classes, and having youth ministry and preaching ministry and Full Cup Cafe and, you know, ladies' days and kids' day, all that stuff, it's really, really good. You know, basketball on Monday nights, all that stuff is good. It's good stuff. But we have to be people who live in the presence of God and bring others into that presence. We have to be those type of people who realize that the presence of God is what changes everything. It's what makes everything worth it. And Moses knows this. Moses realizes this. And remember, Deuteronomy is a recap of the Old Testament. It's a recap of what's come so far. And Moses preaches to the people before they head into the Promised Land. And he says this in verse 32 of chapter 4 in Deuteronomy. He says, ask now about the former days, long before your time, from the day God created human beings on the earth. Ask from one end of the heavens to the other. Has anything so great as this ever happened? Or has anything like it ever been heard of? Now, you have to realize that these people, go back to the other verse. You have to realize that these people have this worldview from the cultures around them that, you know, when the earth was created based on those other cultures and on those other religions, it was all these, you know, this pantheon of gods, and they were oftentimes fighting and killing each other. And a lot of times human beings were made from a dead god or a destroyed god. And human beings were oftentimes made to be servants and slaves of the gods. There was no, you know, purpose. There was no design for why humans were there. And so this whole idea of God creating human beings, and human beings being the crowning achievement, and human beings having a purpose and a place in creation that was higher than any other being, that's completely, you know, foreign to them. And so Moses is reminding them of what he's told them, and he's like, has anything like it ever been heard of? Because nobody else is saying this. And then in verse 33, has any other people heard the voice of God speaking out of the fire as you have and lived? Has any God ever tried to take for himself one nation out of another nation, a people who were not a people? Has any God ever done this by testings, by signs and wonders, by war, by a mighty hand and outstretched arms, or by great and awesome deeds, like all the things the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your very eyes? You see, he's reminding them because they have this problem. The same problem that you and I have. We forget. We forget. We lose sight. I appreciate Wendell's focus on God in our singing, and I appreciate Justin calling our attention to God in the prayer as well, because sometimes we forget, and I've always said this, it's a blessing and a curse. I'm really thankful that there's some things in my life that I'm really thankful that I can't remember as sharply as I did a few years ago. But sometimes it's also a curse because we forget who we are supposed to be focused on. And Moses says this, verse 39, he says, acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. And that's who you serve. That's who you serve. That's who you worship. And so there's two places basically that this must play out. You know, first of all, it has to play out in our daily walk. And once again, Moses realizes this. He realizes and he points out to the early followers of God that this has to play out in your daily walk, the things that you do every single day, when you wake up in the morning, when you walk along, when you go to work, when you come home, when you're with your kids, when you're on vacation. It plays out in all those areas. Listen to what Moses says in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. He says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Grab onto it. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. It's supposed to saturate everything about you. That is the place where this has to take place. We have to realize that the worship of God is saturates. We kind of talked about that last week. It's a lifestyle. It's not an interruption. And the second place that it has to play out is the corporate assembly. You know, and Israel had an incredible system for remembering God. You know, they had all these festivals, these times when the people of Israel would just all get together and they would just remember. They would spend time remembering. They had the Passover. They had the Festival of Weeks, which was 7 weeks after the Passover. A lot of times people thought that was kind of a reminder that, hey, we got the Torah because, you know, they were sprung from Egypt and 7 weeks later they were at Sinai. Then you have the Festival of Tabernacles, which was remembering God taking them through the wilderness on the journey to the Promised Land. So they had all these incredible festivals where they would just corporately get together and remember. And there's something about when you get with other people who are like-minded, like you, and you get with them, and you just play off each other. You get excited, and you pump each other up. One of my friends at OC, his name is Genoa. Isn't that a great name? His name is Genoa, and I'm not making this up, okay? His name is Genoa, and he was an incredible Redskins fan. Okay, he was a really, really big Redskins fan. And in the middle of OC Chapel, he would oftentimes just randomly shout out, "Redskins!" I mean, I'm serious, he did that. In the middle of chapel talks, in the middle of different things, he'd just call out Redskins, and everybody was just kind of like, "What?" And actually, the administration of OC actually sent out an email: whoever is yelling Redskins in the middle of chapel, please stop. You know, nobody knew who it was. But here's the thing: just imagine if OC Chapel had been full of Redskins fans, and one person yells out Redskins, and everybody else starts yelling Redskins, and they start, you know, putting on their, you know, whatever stuff that they have on their heads, and you know, all that's the things, and it turned into like an NFL, you know, cheering section for the Redskins. You know, it would just build off of each other and it would pump everybody up. And when you get together as a corporate assembly, when we get together like what we do every week on Sunday morning, it has to pump each other. We have to pump each other up. We're like-minded people and we're ready to just encourage and build each other up. And so often we walk into these places and we don't realize that's what this is about. It's about pumping each other up and getting each other excited because you're about to go out into the territory of the enemy. And you have to be pumped up. You have to be excited if you're gonna stand against all those people who are standing against God. And so we come together and those are the two places, those are the two main places that worship of God has to play out: our daily walk and the corporate assembly. And like Israel, we worship and serve the Creator God. That's who we worship. That's who we serve. The Creator of the universe. You know, the creator of galaxies, the creator of stars and solar systems, the one who created DNA. You know, they've tried to recreate proteins and different things in tubes and things like that. And they can't get anywhere close to what God did in you and me. They can't. It's impossible. We serve the one who made all that. We serve the one who designed all that. And then after Christ came to earth, we also worship and serve Savior God. We also worship and serve the one who saved us. John tells us in one of his letters, 1 John chapter 4, verse 13, he says, "This is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us the Spirit." He's given us a Spirit, God living in us. He's given us the Spirit, and we have seen and testify that the Father has sent his Son, God the Son, to be Savior of the world. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. We serve Savior God. We serve the one who came down. Us, I mean, we're just pinpricks in the grand scheme of things. We're just little pinheads, literally, in how big the universe is and how long time has existed. We're just little bitty things in that. And yet God came down and dipped into humanity, dipped into this mess that we have on this earth, and said, "I'm gonna save you. And I'm going to live in you. And I'm going to die for you." That's who we serve. That's who we worship. And so what should our response be? What should our response be when we realize that, when we acknowledge that that's who we serve, that's who we worship? And I think the psalmist captures it perfectly. In Psalm 95, verses 6 and 7, he says, "Come, come, let us bow down in worship. Let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture." He cares for us. He loves us. He reached out for us, the flock, under his care. How amazing is that? How exciting is that? I've asked Wendell to lead a song, and I cannot lead this song without doing what it says. And so I want to invite you. This song is called On Bended Knee. It's called On Bended Knee. And I know that we're not Catholic and we don't have the nice little knee rests, okay? Maybe we should. But I want to invite you to do what this song says, if you're comfortable and you're able, okay? And I want us to come on bended knee before our God. And I want us to sing to him and just acknowledge who we're worshiping and who we're bowing before, because the only response that we can have is to fall prostrate before him, because it's just so mind-boggling that the creator of the universe loves me and wants me to serve him and wants me to worship him and cares whether I do or not. So I want to invite you to come on bended knee as we worship together.